And therefore, we're going to try to squeeze in as much as possible in the short amount of time that we have. And if anybody has any questions, please, after we're done, or even if you feel you want to interrupt in the middle, go right ahead, please. The topic is how to get your children to listen to you. And the fact that that topic generates the amount of chuckles that it does just shows that there's something wrong with the way we understand our communication with our children. Most parents do feel that their children don't listen to them enough. A lot of different parents have different ideas of what they should be doing or could be doing or will be doing in order to change that. And mostly it revolves around perhaps saying the right thing or saying it the right way or saying it at the right time or something like that. We're going to suggest tonight that none of the above is the most important. It's not really a matter of what you say so much or even how you say it so much, but it's a matter of who it is that's doing the saying. And what I mean is that people in general, and your children in particular, will be makabel from you depending upon how they perceive their relationship with you. Depending upon who the person is that's doing the talking, what their motives are for saying whatever they're saying, what their motives are for giving you the suggestion or the criticism, that's what's going to determine how much you listen. I'll give you a number of examples how this works on different levels. Did you ever, let's say, get into a fight, perhaps, maybe with your husband, maybe with somebody else, and, you know, then a third party comes to try to make shalom, and usually you tell them, like, butt out. But let's say this third party is maybe a five-year-old kid that comes over and says, could you please stop fighting? That's it, the fight's over, right? You take a look at the innocence of this kid and the fact that this kid, yeah, think about what's happening. There's no big chokhmah there. Right? We're not talking that the Chazon Ish came over to you and gave you some wisdom that came with Ruach HaKodesh, you know, that told you to stop. We're talking about a little kid that's simply annoyed by the fact that you're fighting. He believes that, like, it's not matim. It, like, doesn't pass for you to be fighting. And with all the innocence in the world, literally, and with all the altruism, with no motive whatsoever except the purity that comes from a kid, he comes to you and says, could you please stop fighting? That's what does it. It's not what he says, it's not how he says it, it's who's doing the saying. An adult could come say the same thing, you won't listen. Now, you need to think about that. Why is it that a little child's words can have a greater effect, emotional effect, than that of a wise adult? Now, it's the motive. It's the motive behind and the purity behind what the child is saying. What we're going to try to do is we're going to try to tap into this secret, I guess you could call it, of being the right person, of having the right effect on somebody, not because of what you say or how you say it, but because of who's doing the saying, and see how it applies to us and our children. I'll give you another example where this happens on a totally different level. Say a husband and a wife are having a very, very difficult shalom bayis problems, and it's mamish holding otot, and he has his rav, and she has her rav, and it's a real big mess. So now, what happens is that when somebody makes a suggestion, perhaps to make shalom, what determines whether the suggestion is obeyed is not so much the wisdom of the suggestion itself, but rather whose guy is making the suggestion. In other words, if it's your guy that's making the suggestion, you'll probably listen. If it's the other side's person that's making the suggestion, you probably won't, even if it's the same suggestion, even if it makes perfect sense. So here also, and vice versa. So here also we're talking about not what's being said or how it's being said even. The content of the suggestion, the content of the instruction is irrelevant to whether the instruction will be heeded, but rather who's doing the instructing. There are numerous examples of this, that the determining factor in whether a person is obeyed or not is not what he says or how he says it, it's who he is in relation to the person that he's talking to. Right? Now, therefore, their parents need, aside from saying the right things or saying how to say it, they need to be able to position themselves in their relationship with their child such that they are the type of person that their child will listen to. It's the who. You have to be the right who. Now, very, very often, usually, children perceive their relationship with their parents such, and this is where the friction between parents and children come from. They perceive their relationship with their parents such that the parents are not that right person that they are willing to listen to. They perceive the parents, let's say, one example, as not the person on their side, but the person on the other side. Okay. It very, very often comes out of power struggle between children and parents. Now, once that happens, I have news for you. You lose. Because the children in a power struggle always have more power than the parents do. That's a rule. It's not supposed to be that way. You know, the way it's supposed to be is that the authority is supposed to have a proportionate amount of power. Like, say, David HaMelech. Right? He was the authority and he was the power too. But nowadays it doesn't work that way. This is something we need to live with. Nowadays the authority and the power are divided up. And it's not only in the home. If let's say you're a Rav, I'm not talking if you're Rav that you have your Hasidim that follow you. You're Rav that got hired by a Kehillah. The Rav is the authority, but who has the power? When it becomes a power struggle between the Rav and the Kehillah, who always loses? Always the Rav loses. Now what happens if the Rav gets up and says, well, you, Kehillah, you have to learn to listen to the Rav, and then, I'm not tolerating this, and you... What happens? He gets fired. Okay? So, the Rav is the authority. Yet, the bottom line is that if he doesn't generate the proper relationship with his Kehillah, the right communication channels, it's all over. He cannot rely on his authority to be obeyed. That's the way it is. Parents are in the exact same position. You're the Rav. Your children are the Kehillah. Okay? They should listen to you just like the Kehillah should listen to their Rav. In fact, parents and Rebbeim are compared to each other halachically, and the Rebbe has more authority, we know, right? Because the Rebbe brings the child to Olam Haba, and the parents only brings the child into Olam Hazeh. And if, in terms of listening to a Rebbe, it's so easy, Bizman Hazeh, for a kid to find another yeshiva, and for a kid to find another, or for a Kehillah to just fire the Rav, now you're thinking, but he can't fire me, right? He can't find other parents. That's merely a biological technicality. In all the ways that counts, parents get fired nowadays. That's the way it works. In certain ways, they can't fire the parents. In other words, they'll still get the Yerusha. But that happens no matter what. But in terms of listening, obeying, in terms of the parents being manhig the children, it's very, very often happens that the parents get fired. And I said once before, not in this country, in America, you may have heard it on one of the tapes, the Sephorno in Parshas Bahaloischo explains how children listen to parents and why. It's an amazing thing. It's talking over there, Moshe Rabbeinu by the Asafsuf, where a rabble comes to Moshe Rabbeinu and they demand that he produce for them meat in the Midbar. Right? Now how's he going to squeeze meat out of sand? And they had mon anyway, which is better than meat. So Moshe Rabbeinu turns up to Hashem and he says, Hashem, what did I do wrong? What do you have against me? Ha'anochi ha'risi oisam, am I the parents of these people? And the Sephorno explains, he says like this, the only way this should be hung up on every parent's wall, in every Jewish home, you know, together with the other piskumim that get put up, This should be hung up on every parent's home. The Sefarno says over there, in Bahaloischa, that the only way that children listen to parents, that parents can be manhig their children when they disagree, is because the children know that the parents mean the children's good, and that the parents love the children, and therefore the children listen to the parents. However, Moshe Rabbeinu says, this group of people don't trust me, and they're testing me to see how far out of my way I'm going to go for them. So Sefarno says that because the children trust the parents, because the children know that the parents love them, because they know that the parents mean the children's good, that's why the children listen. It's not because the parents are stronger. It's not because the parents are the authority. It's not because of this. Children have bechira chofshis to say, I refuse to listen. Now, it's not supposed to be that way. It's not. I'm not saying it should be. Children should, and the kahila should listen to the Rav. Okay? But the fact is, and since the beginning of time, there have been children from very, very choshuva homes, very good homes, that have not followed in the derech of the parents. The first example of this that I could think of is Cain, who killed his brother, who went off the derech in his home. After that, the next example I can think of is Yishmael, who went off the derech in his home. And the next example is Esav. And it goes all the way down the line, and if you want a list, look in the Medrash Rabbah at the beginning of Shemois, the first page. It gives a whole list, down to David and Avshalom, I believe, is where it ends, I think. I may be off by one or two examples. And he gives a whole list of people from the Choshevs to homes that went off. And it gives examples of what the Avos HaKadoshim did, what errors they made, caused the children not to listen. But the Sefarno is teaching us a secret over here. It says the way to get your children to listen, the way to get your children to be nohug after what you want, is to get them to trust you, to get them to understand that you love them and that you mean their own good. Okay? Now, how many children don't believe that their parents love them, and how many children don't believe that their parents mean for their good? I have news for you. Many. And I'll give you examples of where this comes up. How many times have we told our children, you should do this, go to sleep, because you're giving me a headache already. Right? Get out of here, stop making noise, you're giving me a headache, you're annoying me. Now, take that example. Whose welfare is the parent concerned about that they're suggesting to the child that they go do something? Has nothing to do with the child's welfare. Has to do with the parents. Now, parents are entitled not to have headaches. And the children are obligated to listen to the parents. That's kibud avim. They have to go to sleep when the parents, and they have to get out of there, stop annoying the parents. But that's not chinuch. Once the gun is away from the child's head, so to speak, the effect is gone. It's not a lasting effect. You can force the issue, but it's not going to remain with them. Chanoich lenar al pi dar koi, you have to get the right derech. Why? Gam ki yaz kin lo yosur mimenu. Because then, even after you're not around anymore, when the gun goes away, when there's no force, then it will remain with him. So, that's example number one, where parents say, get out of, leave me alone because you're annoying me. How about, I want you to grow up to be this because then I'm going to get nachas from you. Or I don't want you to dress a certain way because you're embarrassing me and your father. All of these examples are very, very common. And the reason why children don't care too much, the reason why this is the worst possible thing to say in terms of all the options, is because you're not concerned about the kid. You're concerned about yourself. Which is fine. You're telling the kid, look, do me a favor. Be concerned about me and change your lifestyle, change your behavior, whatever. Yes, the kid should listen. But you have so many better options. This is the worst of all the above. Okay? Remember, once you start a power struggle, you lose. Because although you're the authority, the child has the bottom line, bechira chofshis, to do what he wants. It's like a terrorist situation. Let me tell you how to look at this. It's like a terrorist situation where your child is holding himself captive, hostage. And he can harm your child very easily, and there's nothing you can do about it. And therefore, he has the power, theoretically, to manipulate you and wrap you around his finger if you don't know how to be mechanech him in the right way. In a power struggle, your child is held hostage by your child. How often do parents face a dilemma when they see that, well, if I don't give in, so he's going to get worse. If I don't give in a little, then he's going to become a lot worse. That's a terrorist situation. That means the kid is saying to you, well, if you don't do what I want, I'm going to harm your child. That's what's happening. And children consciously do this. They don't look at themselves like little terrorists. But that's exactly what it is. It's extortion, it's blackmail, and they're holding themselves hostages. I'm going to hurt myself, I'm going to get worse, I'm going to do, unless you do what I want. And that's what happens when parents enter into a power struggle. It never works. The Sephardim says it. Not talking modern liberal psychological methodology. This is old Das Torah from the olden days. Now, at this point, I need to interject that you may be thinking that those women that are familiar with the Psukim in Mishle may be thinking that Shlomo HaMelech is constantly recommending hard punishments for children. Choseich shiv toisoinei benoi. Right? If you don't use the stick, then you hate your son. That's what it says. Yasir bincha kilo yomus. Yasir is from the word yisurim. Same word as musar, actually. It comes from the word yisurim. It means stark. Punish your child, and then he won't die. That's what Pasuk says. Now, we have to understand like this, that all the punishments methodology that's recommended by Shlomo HaMelech and down is usually not the same punishment or corporal punishment that takes place nowadays in the homes where they feel they're doing it. And I'll explain why. Because it's all over. You look at the Vilna Gaon's Perush on Mishle and you'll see that there are all sorts of guidelines. It's not Hefka. When you hit your child, when you punish him, you're only supposed to do it to be Machanach him and not to let the anger off your chest. If you do it because you're angry, you hit me Teich Kas, then that's not what Shlomo HaMelech is recommending. If your pulse races, if it gets above 64 when you're hitting your child, then you're not doing it the right way. And you're not doing it to be Machanach him, you're doing it for your sake, not for his sake. That's not what Shlomo HaMelech is recommending. I'll give you an example. This is the test. When parents come to me and they say that no, they want to follow the way they used to do it in the olden days, they're going to take a big 2x4 and beat the kid up if he doesn't behave. Something like that. And sometimes I mean that literally. This is what I ask them. Say, let's say your little kid would accidentally flush a piece of aluminum foil down the toilet. So you have to punish him because he's not supposed to play with the plumbing, right? He could get the toilet stuck and stuff like that. Okay, but it's no big deal, right? Piece of aluminum foil. Now what happens if the same kid flushed not the aluminum foil down the toilet, but your diamond ring? Okay? You'd be much more angry. The punishment would be much different, much more severe. It shows you don't know what you're doing. Because the kid doesn't know the difference between the diamond ring and the piece of aluminum foil. As far as the kid's concerned, the aveira that the kid committed, the indiscretion that he did, is the exact same thing. A little shiny piece of, to him, aluminum foil and diamond ring is of the same value. And Mistama, he has more glatta cup than we do in this. But to him, it's the exact same thing. So why should he get punished so much more for one, more than the other, where as far as he's concerned, his disobedience is equal in both cases? The answer is, because it's not him you're concerned about, It's your loss you're concerned about. It's you that you're concerned about. That shows that you don't know what you're doing. And there are a lot of methods of control that we used to employ that we don't anymore because we don't do them properly. A classic example is cheirim. It used to be that we used to put somebody in cheirim when they did an aveira. Even maybe an aveira drabonon, depends who you ask. And in Shulchan Aruch there's such a thing, hilchas cheirim. Right after hilchas chala and hilchas trumas and maestras. Same chelik, right there. And the Taz brings that bizman hazeh, we don't put people in cheirim, even for big chomer dika aveiras, you know why? Because bizman hazeh things get really messy. And people don't, there are a lot of menuvolim and people don't know how to treat the people in cheirim and we don't know exactly how to relate to the whole thing. And people get angry and they fight with each other and it can lead even to shvichas domim and the whole system is messed up and we don't do it properly. We can't accept the cheirim properly, maybe we can't give the... So we just stop doing it. It just doesn't work anymore. So what worked in the olden days very often does not work now, not because... Nishtana ha-zmanim or nishtanu ha-tivim, that's not the pshat. But because we are not on the madrega to properly employ the methods that used to be employed. We are not tzadikim enough, we are not erlich enough, we are not smart enough, we are not balidas enough to be able to properly use the methods that were available to people that were on a higher madrega than us. And very, very often, this hitting, the severe punishments that you read about in Mishlei is one of those things too. We don't do it the right way. We do it in a way that's counterproductive. We do it mitoich kas. And that's not, isn't work. So no amount of frumkeit is going to change that. Do it the right way, it would work, but usually it's not the case. And therefore, again, the power struggle, the force, the sometimes locking a kid up to prevent him from doing something is appropriate. But if that is your strongest tool in your chinuch of your children at home, you're in bad shape. Now that we got a general idea of what not to do and a general idea of what we need to do. We need to position ourselves to be that type of person that our child will listen. Who is that type of person? We know that we need our children to trust us. We need that to know, we need that to, that our children should realize that we're out for their benefit, not for ours. How do we do this? Okay? Let's add another problem before we come to the solutions. Very often parents come to me with a dilemma. The dilemma is like this. Mother comes and says, I don't know what my kid wants from me. He wants his freedom. He wants to do this and that. And I give it to him. And then, when things go wrong, he has tainas, why wasn't I there to protect him? Right? Kids want their freedom. But kids actually have tainas on parents when that freedom leads to suffering, leads to pain. And they come to their parents with tainas. And sometimes it goes really, really deep and it comes out years later. Why did you subject me to all the aggravation that you subjected me to? Why didn't you protect me? Why didn't you give me guidelines and boundaries? That's what I wanted. Usually comes out later out in life. When B'shas Maisa, the kid is screaming, I want freedom. So how does this work? It's very confusing for parents. And one of the most common questions is, where do I use flexibility and where do I put my foot down? That's probably, I would say that's the most common question that I get. Kid did this. Should I let it go? Where do I choose my battles? Now, rather than give one answer, because first of all, one answer does not apply to everybody. Each kid is different. Each situation is different. Each case is different. And being that I have to catch a flight back to the States tomorrow, I don't have enough time to go through even a small fraction of all the different possible scenarios. And it's not necessary, because it depends on a perspective. Now we're going to start with solutions. We need to understand what our children expect from us and what our role is as parents. Our role is not to be like David HaMelech, the enforcer of the rules, because the home today is not set up in a way that will work. Because although we have the authority, the kid has the power. We mentioned that already. The way it works is like this. The parent's job, as far as teaching is concerned, is to teach the child and to give him over the chokhmah that the parents were makabel from their parents and their rebbeim, and that's fine. But as far as enforcing is concerned, as far as picking your battles, your job is similar to that of a bodyguard. In other words, let's say you were vested with the role of protecting a political dignitary. Let's say you were protecting the President of the United States. Okay? I don't know how much you'd want to protect the political dignitaries over here. So let's use the President of the United States for an example. Okay? And you were the head of his bodyguards, they're called the Secret Service. And you tell the President, President, don't go there. There are terrorists there. It's dangerous for you, whatever, because you know. Because you have all the spies and the intelligence agencies, and you know what's good for him and what's bad for him. But the President doesn't listen to you. He says, look, I need to go there. I need my votes. I need the campaign. I'm going there. Leave me alone. What would you do? You do like some parents do and try to lock the President into a closet and make sure he doesn't go? It'll work, but as soon as he gets out of that closet, you're fired. You do like other parents do and tell the President, all right, go there, see if I care. Come back to me after you get shot and then you'll see I was right. Okay? I don't care. Go ahead. You know, but I told you so. It's not going to work either because the President does get shot. You're fired. Would you say, oh, I give up. I give up. I just tried. I did my best and I'm just going to say to Tehillim that nobody kills you. That wouldn't work. You know what you would do? You would tell the President, look, I want you to know I don't approve of this. I don't want you to go. It's dangerous. Okay. You're not as informed as me to understand that. Fine. But at least let me teach you how to protect yourself. If you see somebody skulking about in the shadows over there, press the button and we'll have 20 men there right away. Right? If you see something that looks like this or something like that, then this is what you should do. So on and so forth. That I want you to know I don't want you to go there. But now that you're going there, at least I'm going to protect you as much as possible. Okay? Now, what's the mile of this? The mile of this is that the next time you tell the President don't go somewhere, the next time you tell him something, he's going to trust you more that not only do you have his interest in mind, you want to protect him, but you also are capable of understanding his needs as well. That's the role of a parent. Your kid perceives himself as the President of the United States. Okay, as the President of the whole world. His job in his mind is to grow up and go out and experiment and see the world. And he knows when he argues with you that you're smarter than he is. He knows that you really know better what's right and what's wrong and what's safe and what's not safe. He knows that. Sometimes. Let's assume he even does, in those cases where he does. But he's saying, look, you have to work harder to protect me. It's easy to tell me don't do this and do this. But then I suffer because I have a role in this game also. My role is to grow up, to do things. Not to be mitzumtzum in a little corner. I learn by experience, and my role is to have experiences. A kid doesn't know he's saying this, but that's emotionally what's going through him. All my friends are doing this, right? That's what he'll say. It's normal, right? Which means, look, fine, you want to protect me, you want to make sure I don't come to home, fine. Don't lock me up. Teach me how to protect myself. Okay? You think I'm not capable of it now? Well, I'm doing it anyway. Okay? Fine. Maybe I'll get burnt, maybe I won't. But I'm doing it anyway. Do me a favor. Try your best. Keep me safe. That's the kid's message to parents. Give you an example that happened with me once, years ago. My kids were little. We were going on a tiyul upstate New York in the Adirondack Mountains. And we were by this. The kids thought it was a mountainside. Actually, it was like a cliff. Okay? They wanted to, like, hike down the mountainside. Okay? Translates, they wanted to jump off a cliff. Okay? Because there was this beautiful stream down on the bottom, and it was like really hot, and they wanted to go swimming or whatever it was. And I didn't want to let them go because it really wasn't safe, but they really, really were insistent. They really, really wanted to go. You know, and it would have really changed the tzura of the entire trip. You know, if I would have... This is what I did, okay? My wife, Bishamoifin, didn't want to go. She was scared. You know, she was the smartest one of all of us. She was Bishamoifin. I told my kids, all right, you know what? You're going, but I'm going too. And I'm going first. And this is what we're doing. I mean, it wasn't, you know, I'm like being magazim a little, you know, when I say it was like jumping off a cliff. I said, I'm going to, and I'm going first. And you're going to watch me. And whatever rock I step on, that's where you're going to step. And whatever branch I grab on, that's where you're going to grab. One by one. It'll take us a long time, but we're going down there. Okay? And anybody that does something different is going to get it over their heads. You're going to stay there in the middle of the cliff. You're not moving, all right? Now, the obedience and the precision with which they followed my instructions, it was like, you know, a bunch of soldiers in the army. Now, what's pshat? Pshat was, they saw, they were little kids, they saw that I was willing to go out of my way. I wasn't interested in what's easiest for me. It wasn't easy for me. I didn't want to go down. I'm an old man. It was harder for me. They were kids. It was easy. And they saw that I was willing to go out of my way to try very, very hard to find a mahalach, literally, that's safe for them, that also isn't mitzamsam them into not doing something that's really possible for them to do. In other words, children are looking to parents and they're saying, look, it's easy for you to tell me don't do this. Is that the best you can do? Maybe if you tried a little harder. Maybe if you really went out of your way a bit. Maybe if you put in a little more effort, you could really be mechanech me a bit better and give me a bit more slack and we could work on this together. That's the question. Are you making it easier for yourself by telling me no? Or is that really what's necessary for me? That's what they're confused about. That's what they want to know. And this is why children take hashpa from their friends, very often a lot more from their parents, because they know the answer to that question when it's directed to their friends. There's no such thing, they say when parents tell children no, so children can have a suffix in their minds, maybe you're really making it easier for yourself. But when friends say, you know, I don't approve of this, they never have that suffix with their friends. Because friends have nothing to gain or lose. You know, you do something, it's not my achrayus. The hashpa, if you want to be that type of person, we said you have to be that type of person that your children are willing to be makabel from. You know what type of person that is? You have to position yourself to be the same type of giving, caring, loving parent the way the friend is perceived to be giving, loving, caring. What's the difference? The difference is selfless. Interested in the kid as opposed to interested in yourself. I'll tell you a medrash. This week's parsha, amazing thing. The medrash Tanchuma, right here. The Satan comes to Avram Avinu and to Yitzchak Avinu to try to convince them not to do the Akedah. Now, the Satan is very, very smart. And he's not going to come looking like the Satan. Because then as soon as they see he's the Satan, they run away. So he came to Avram Avinu, it says, and made himself look like a Zokain. Nidmaloy kidmus Zokain, it says. He looked like a Rosh Hashiva. The Satan came looking like Reb Chaim Kanievsky. And he came to Avram Avinu, and he told Avram Avinu, don't do this, it's bad, your son Yitzchak, so on and so forth. And Avram didn't listen. Then he came to Yitzchak Avinu. Now Yitzchak was already an adult, B'shas Maisa. And Yitzchak was already Tzadik HaTzadikim. And you know what it says, how he came to Yitzchak? It says, Olach me'olov v'nidme lebochur v'yomar al yaminoi shel Yitzchak. He disguised himself as a bochur. And that's how he tried to be mashpia on Yitzchak. Now, we would think that a Rosh Hashiva, a gadol, would also have the hashpah on Yitzchak, just like Avram Avinu, right? But the Satan knows better. And the Satan knows that even a bacha on the madrega of Yitzchak Avinu listens to a contemporary, a ben giloy, a friend, more than the Rosh Hashiva. Hear this, it's not a chesaron in your children that they accept suggestions and advice from their friends more than from adults. Yitzchak Avinu had that same trait. At least the Satan thought so. Okay? It's natural. It's normal. It's a normal Yetzer Hara, which is exactly what happened over there, that children should accept Musar and suggestions from their friends more than from their parents, very, very often. The reason is because the children believe that the parents are out for their own nachas, they're out to avoid their own agmas nefesh, they're out to avoid their own embarrassment, they're out for their own sake, partly, as opposed to purely for the sake of the children. That's one of the things the Sepharno is telling us. So, position yourself and to give over the message to your children that you are out for their interest as opposed to your interest. What do you do? Well, the first thing is it should be so. That's the first thing, because the children can really smell our attitudes. We can't really hide from our children. If we really, really believe in nefesh, are concerned about them, and not concerned, we're entitled to be concerned about us too. But we cannot expect that to be the tool of chinuch with which we're going to influence our children. We need to be able to look deep, deep, deep inside ourselves and look at our motives for our instructions and our restrictions on our children, whatever they may be. Are we really, really concerned about them? Or is it the diamond ring that got flushed down the toilet? Is it the fact that they're annoying us? Is it the fact that we don't get nachas from them, so it's our pain that's driving us? They can smell it. And therefore, I have parents who are embarrassed to walk in the street with their children because of the way their children look. And the parents are embarrassed because of their friends. And I have a man who's a Rebbe in Yeshiva in Brooklyn who tells his son, who's a shtickle off the derech, off the derech enough that he looks different than his father would want him to look, don't come within 2 blocks of the yeshiva where I teach because the Talmidim may see you and I'll be embarrassed. And he comes to me, he wants to know how he can get his kid back. I say, you know the first thing you should do? I say, Shabbos afternoon, walk down Ocean Parkway, big street in Brooklyn, with your arm around his shoulder. And everybody you meet, you introduce him, this is my son, his name is so-and-so, with a smile on your face. And when you learn with him, don't learn in your house in the middle of the night when nobody sees. Walk with him into the biggest Beis Medrash that you can find in the most crowded time in the middle of the Beis Medrash, where everybody's looking, and sit down over there. Because the bottom line is, he is your son. And you know what? If you're not proud of him, you don't have to be proud of the fact that he looks this way, but just the fact that he's your son, he's on your team, like that Shalom Bayis issue, you got to be his guy. Okay? You got to be on his side. Doesn't mean you have to approve. Your lawyers don't approve of everything you do. Your friends don't approve of everything you do. But when your friend says, I don't approve, it's different. Let's say you're a Vizhnitsa Chassid, right? And you have a friend who's a Vizhnitsa Chassid. And he insults Vizhnitz to you. So you'll take it from one Vizhnitsa to the next. But if it's a Gera Chassid that insults Vizhnitz to you and you're a Vizhnitsa Chassid, then you're totally on the defensive. Why? You know why? Because he's with you. He's your guy. He's on your team. And here again is another example. It's not what was said, or it's not even how it was said. It's who said it. You gotta be the right who. It doesn't matter so much what you say, how strict you are. It mamash doesn't matter how strict parents are. There is no... In Meir Shearim, the kids are not going more off the derech than they are in Woodmere. It's not the strictness that drives kids off. And it's not the leniencies either, if everything is done al pi Torah. It's not the leniencies that make kids go off, where the leniencies are reasonable. It mamish doesn't make a difference within reason. What makes a difference more than anything else is the relationship between the parents and the kids. It's who the parents are to the children. When the child looks at the parent, does it look at somebody, does it look at one vishnitzer to another vishnitzer, one gera to another gera, or does it look like from one sect to another sect, so that whenever the parent criticizes the child, it looks like an outsider doing it. Then they're not going to be makabel. If it's an insider doing it, then you got it. Okay? Did you ever hear an army sergeant ranking on the soldiers after practice, whatever, and they didn't do well? You're a bunch of bums, you're stupid, you don't know what you're doing, whatever. And they take it from him. Say, soldiers, let's say in a war, right? You ever hear the rhetoric that with which they're manhig, not the superiors, their inferiors? Did you ever hear the way they talk? If a parent would dare speak like that to a kid, they'd call the mishtara, and they'd come, the authorities, and they'd come take the kid away, and abuse, and all sorts of things. And imagine if a Rebbe would speak like this to a kid in a class. But what's pshat? Pshat is because the sergeant and the privates, they're fighting the same war against the same people. They're on the same team. It's the Vizhnitsa with the Vizhnitsa. That's what it is. If the person looks at you as somebody on their side, then they'll accept your disapproval. Parents confuse this. They think that when you say you have to be on the same side as your kid, it means you have to approve of everything they do and you have to be a yes man. No, no, 1,000 times, loy with an aleph, that's not pshat. You will accept criticism, disagreement, and disapproval from somebody if you perceive that person on your side. You'll accept from your best friend's criticism and disapproval more than you will from your parents. Why? Because you know your best friend's on your side. The idea is not, you know, well, parents ask me, should I approve here, should I disapprove, should I this? It's a good question. But that's not what the parents really want to ask. Because it doesn't matter so much. It matters who you are that's doing the disapproving. You have to look at yourself as somebody that you have to give the message over to your child that no matter what, whether he does right, whether he does wrong, okay, whether you approve of what he does or not, you're still his best friend in the world. And I don't mean friend somebody who has to play ball with him. I mean friend the opposite of enemy. That's the touch. The following comes from Rav Shimon Schwab. I heard it from him, but it's in one of his svarim, the red one. It's Selected Writings, I think it's called. Because you know what the taitch of a parent is? We'll see what Rashi says. Yosef HaTzadik tells his brothers, Vaisimeni la'av la'paroi. Paroi made me a father over him. Father? So says Rashi, av chaver. That's what a father is. A father is a chaver, a friend. Again, it doesn't mean buddy-buddy friends. What does it mean? So he continues, and this he heard from a very big tzaddik, very big Talmud Chacham, a Talmud Muvak of the Avnei Nezer. This man was very, very big. The Satmar Rav has a tshuva to him in his tshuvas, and the Satmar Rav writes to this man. He lived in Baltimore, Maryland, and the Satmar Rav writes to this man with a kavod and a respect that's exceptional. It's oisnamic in the entire sefer. This is what he said. You know what a friend is? The first time a concept is mentioned in the Torah, that defines the concept. That's a principle we know. You know what the first time the concept of a friend is mentioned in the Torah? It's by Yehuda and Chira. Chira Reyehu Hadulami. Which means that a friend is the taich, somebody who you can confide in, you can trust, and tell them even if you did an Avera. Yehudin Tamar. That's what a friend is. And that's what a parent is supposed to be. somebody that a child can trust and confide in and come to and tell the parent even when they're in trouble, even when they did an Avera. How many, you don't have to raise your hands because I know the answer already. How many parents in this room feel that if their child did something wrong, they would come to you and confide in you and tell you? Minority. Okay. I once took a survey of students of mine, girls, sometimes boys. Very few of them would. More parents think their children would than children think they actually would do it. Children do it because they're afraid they're going to get caught, and they may as well like come to get out of trouble. But actually come for help, it happens less than we think, and it should be. That's the taitch of a parent. Sometimes parents make a very big mistake. They say, well, at least my child's ashamed of what he did. He won't tell me. At least he's embarrassed. It's a toys. The child isn't ashamed. The child is scared. Shame and fear are two different things. It's very easy to make your children scared to come to tell you. If your children are ashamed of the aveiros they did, you have big tzaddikim for kids. Big tzaddikim. Right? But that's not pshat. Pshat is they are scared stiff to tell you. There's a big difference. Probably telling their friends first. I find lots of times whenever, you know, I go very, very often to different communities when I speak to parents there, and every community is different. Eretz Yisrael is different than America. First time I came to Eretz Yisrael to speak a while ago, so they kept telling me that the culture here is different than America, the dynamics of the family, the problems is a lot different. What's going on in the town, the particular neighborhood near Yerushalayim where I was speaking, and the hills, he's going to tell me what's going on and what the problems are in the community. I said, fine, I'll do that, but not first. Bring me to the kids. He said, bring me to the kids, find me a kid who I can trust, who's willing to cooperate, right? Or bring me to the place where they hang out at night. I'm going to find out what's really going on. Knew before the adults of what was going on. Years. And the adults, they wouldn't believe, they wouldn't be macabre, this, and the kids even gave up on the adults. There was a mice where somebody told me that when they found one of these guys, one of these monsters, somebody told me that, well, this guy, this child molester, he made a Shom Zocher for a grandson. Talking about a guy in his 60s. He made a Shom Zocher for his grandson, and some man, a neighbor, wanted to bring his kids, and the kid says, I'm not going to this guy's house. And the father, like, didn't know why. He figured, like, the kid is just being an auction, has bad midas, right? All the kids in the neighborhood knew about this guy. The adults are the last to know. If you want to know what's going with the problems are in a community, and I found this in New York, in Miami, Memphis, Tennessee, in California, in Yerushalayim, everywhere. And I've had time, I'm certain it would apply to B'nai Brak also. It's everywhere in the world. The kids know a lot more about the problems in the community than the adults do. And if you want to know, this is what Rav Schwab is saying, you got to be the person who they're going to talk to. In that sense, you have to be a friend. In that sense. And I know friend is like almost a trefa word, because it conjures up visions of dancing around in a street or playing ball with a kid or something, and you feel that that's a contradiction. It flies in the face of your role as parents. So don't use the word friend. Use some other word, but it's the opposite of enemy. Okay? Use any word you like. I'm going to say friend because it's the best that I could think of, and I'm being very clear as to what I don't mean by it. You need to be able to give the message over to your children that they can trust you. You will protect them even when they are disobedient, as to best of your ability. And none of this means that you have to show approval. The biggest thing that parents have to learn, if there's one thing that parents need to learn, it's how to show disapproval in the right way. How to show disapproval with tolerance. It's two different things. Tolerance and approval are two different things. Approval means, yes, I'm maskim, it's a haskama. Tolerance means, I'm not going to kill you. It's two totally different things. like your friends. Your friends, I'm sure that all of us throughout our lives came to our friends to help us in some scheme, maybe even when we were kids, that a friend said, you're crazy if you do this. Right? But you know what the friend does? I'll help you anyway. Or even if I'll help you, I'll be there to make sure you don't get yourself killed. That's what a friend is, right? I'm sure all of us have had this experience one way or the other, right? I'm going to be there just to make sure you don't do something really, really stupid. That's what a parent is. Now, this friend is not showing approval. At every step of the way, you're so crazy, you're crazy, this is the craziest thing you ever did in your life. How did you get me mixed up in this, right? But a friend is still a friend because they don't want you to get hurt. Right? That's like the Secret Service protecting the President of the United States. That's what the kid wants. Okay? The hashpo, it's not tricks. Parents are looking for tricks. You know, I was once in class in New York, and a lady asked a question. She has a 15-year-old daughter, Beis Yaakov girl. Once was a Beis Yaakov girl. An Amolaga Beis Yaakov girl that met the wrong friend, and the friend schlepped this girl off the derech, and now it's bad news. And the mother is asking me things. In the middle of the Shakla Vitaria here, the mother asks me, Rabbi Shapiro, do you have any psychology degrees? Then no. Absolutely not. Only went to yeshiva, that's it. So she says, well, how do you expect to successfully influence these kids without any psychology degrees? They said to her, I want to ask you something. You tell me that you had a nice 15-year-old Beis Yaakov girl who was fine until she met this bad friend who schlepped her off the derech. Can you tell me what psychology degrees this friend had? Okay. Since when do you have to be a big psychologist to love and care for somebody and to accept them and be mashpia on them? That's what Hashpa is. That's what the Sepharno is saying. We're not talking about psychoanalysis. We're not talking about, you know, kids that stand on their heads and howl in the full moon. We're talking about regular kids with Yetzer Hara versus Yetzer Tov issues. And the way to be mashpia on them, and it's true with kids the same way it's true with anybody, with your husbands, the same way it's true with your friends. You care for somebody. Selflessly. You accept them. Has nothing to do with approval. You accept them. You're their friend through thick and thin. Unconditionally. You have a hashpa on them. If you want to know who's influencing your children, ask them one question. Ask them, who do you think cares about you? Who would go out of their way for you? Whatever their answer is, that's who's influencing them. That's a big problem. You know why? Because there are a lot of bacharim in yeshiva that will tell you that there are yeshivas, there are rebbeim, a big talmid chachamim, great magidei shir, gevaldig lamdanim. But how many of our bacharim would tell us, my Rebbe loves me? If I broke my leg and I was out of yeshiva for a week, my Rebbe would lose sleep wondering if I'm okay. Because the person that would lose sleep is the person that has the biggest hashpa. And if you want to know how to control, be manhig is the word in the Sepharno. Whatever translation you want to use for that word. How to influence your children, this is it. If your children know that you're losing sleep over them, not because you're nervous, you know when a kid comes home late, oh, you made me crazy, I couldn't, that you're concerned about you, okay? That you're concerned about them, you lose sleep because you want to know how they're doing. Okay? And you've got them. Right? I'll tell you a story that just happened to me here. Frankly, I'm shocked. I was here about 5 months ago. I was speaking around, and granted this B'nai Brak is a choiv, because I was supposed to do it last time, but I never got a chance to, so I'm paying up my choiv now. I was speaking different places in Eretz Yisrael, and a lady comes over to me. She lives out some moshav outside of Yerushalayim. A balas tshuva, middle-aged woman. She says that she has a sister in America in a cult. The lady was never from. She's 45 years old. And she's in a cult for the past 20 years. In a little town in the Catskills.
A cut.
That's what they call it, a cut?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know if cut actually describes exactly what we're trying to give over here. Cut is just like a gang. This is not a gang. This is where they brainwash you and they make you shave your head and do crazy things. That gives it up. Fine, okay. In a little town in upstate New York, so then what's a gang? How do they say gang? Okay. I hear. I guess Ben Yehuda Paskin, that's a kinufia and that's a cut. Okay. All right. So she's 45 years old. She's been there for 20 years. Can I maybe do something? They had these cult busters, these people trying and nothing. She was once in her sister's apartment, and the sister, single woman, 45 years old, she has a mural, a photograph on her wall of the guru's feet. The feet of the guru. The guru is the Rosh Hakat, I guess, right? The Rosh Hakat. His feet. Havi Mesavik Bafar Aglehem. Bare feet from the ankle down, 2 feet, big picture on the wall. And this woman sits there like meditating. This is really, really crazy stuff. She wants to know if I can help. I tell her, listen, the MS, I don't really do cults. You know, it's not my thing. But I'm not going to tell her no. It's Rachmanis on this lady, a sister she loves. And happens to be that I have a lot of mishpoch in South Fallsburg. And I said, I'll try to do something. Okay. Now I'm here now 5 months later, and I'm here for chasna actually, and this woman was by the chasna, and I figure I'm going to go over to her and I'm going to tell her, look, I tried, because I did contact some krovim of mine, we had some sort of a plan, and I said I tried, you know, we're not giving up, but you know, Hashem Yazor. Anyway, when I tell somebody to go find the woman on the other side of the mechitza, she comes running over to me when she finds out that I'm there. Oh, thank you so much. Her sister is out of the cult. She's learning about Judaism. What happens? Listen to what happens. She comes knocking on her door. Now, this particular little town, it's like really, really little. Really, really small town in the mountains. And besides the cult, there's a yeshiva there. And the yeshiva is like the second biggest group. I was going to say katz, but, you know, the second biggest group, you know, in town. From Haredi yeshiva. Guy comes knocking on this woman's door. Says the Rosh Yeshiva wants to speak to you. Rosh Yeshiva from the yeshiva. It's a 45-year-old woman, totally not from nothing. What is the Rosh Yeshiva? The guru from the other cult, you know? It's like a big covet. Imagine, like somebody comes in and wants me, you sure? I say, yeah, are you so-and-so? This is your name from this place, right? We had the name and everything. So, yeah, that is a woman, nobody gives her any attention. She just sits there in front of her feet the whole day, right? Doing whatever mumblings that they do, whatever tefillahs that they say to the feet. And that's her life. The Rosh Yeshiva wants to speak to him. Okay, she's not. Yeshiva says, "This Rosh Yeshiva, you are so and so. I found out that you're a Yid. We want to teach you Torah. This is your heritage. So I know exactly what words were said, but that was the idea. Now, what would you do if you were in her shoes? You know what the Vart is over here? The Vart is there wasn't any major words of wisdom." No great chokhmas, you know, no great Torah codes over here that were discovered by computers that convinced her that Torah is min hashamayim. We're talking about a little poshita person that just got a gevaldige chunk of kovod. Not even kovod. Kovod is honor, you know. Not even kovod. Interest. Concern. Somebody cares about her. Somebody noticed her. How the, and not just somebody, not just another nobody. The guru from the Haredi cult, okay? That's in her mind the way it looks. Just noticed her. I have a nephew over there who runs the Eshat Torah program up there. He's apparently learning with. As soon as I get back to America, I'm going to find out exactly what happened. I only know from this lady. I met her last week.
And
she got into the
cult. It's true, but 20 years, you know. Imagine, like, you're this lady, and somebody has your name.
This Rosh Hashiva has your name and your story. I found out that you're a Yid. It's concern. You know what? You know what a bezoyan is? You know what the word bezoyan means? Okay? But not only embarrassed. You know what it literally means? Like levazbez. Okay? Means like to throw away. Means you don't count. That's what it means. It means the reason why, if Shamshon Folhurst says this, that a bezoyan means that it's like you're dead. Why is it like you're dead? Because when you're dead, you're not here. When you're mavuzah, I machzach as if you're not here. You don't count. I don't care what you say. Your opinion means nothing. I ignore you. All different forms of bezoyanus, but bezoyanus means you don't count. The opposite is mamash like giving somebody chayim. If being mavuzah somebody is like, and he doesn't say this, Rav Shamshon Folhurst, but it's like he mamash said it without just saying these words. He says that the reason why being mavaza somebody is like kiilu, you killed them, because the taich of misa is you're no longer here, and the taich of bezoyan is I'm treating you as if you're not here. So the opposite of bezoyan, the opposite of giving somebody misa, is giving him chiyus. How do you give somebody chiyus? By making them count. I care about you. I care about your opinion. I don't have to agree with you, but at least I care about your opinion. I ask you what you think about something. You count by me. I mamash give you chiyus. You know, Rabbi Aaron Kotler, whenever he used to drive or be driven from Lakewood to New York, he used to go on something called the Garden State Parkway. Now, they have a whole bunch of toll booths where you have to pay. Now it's 30 cents, then maybe it was a nickel. And you know, they have like live people that collect tolls and they have exact change lanes. Rabbi Aaron Kotler was makbid that even if the whole thing is empty, or even if there are big lines, you should always go to the person, never go to the exact change lanes. Why? Because imagine, I was talking about some shagets, some schwarz in a toll booth, right? What are we talking? We're not talking about a Rosh Hashiva over here that you have to give covet. We're talking about a human being. He says when he sees that there's a car comes and he throws the money in the exact change, he feels like he's replaced, that he's disposable, that you don't need him. He could be replaced by an electronic basket. He feels mavuzah. Because he feels like he doesn't matter. When you go to him, you feel he's doing something, you know? I mean, he's not making big chedushe Torah, but he's doing something. He feels like he matters. And Rabbi Aaron was makbid like that. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein said the difference between in America and in Europe is that in Europe, when, let's say, somebody's waiting for the taxi, so they used to say, hurry, the balagola is waiting. In America, here, or actually there, they say, hurry, the taxi is waiting. Not the taxi driver. The taxi is waiting. Which means here, the driver is bottled to the taxi. He's a chelik of the taxi. A taxi has a carburetor, has a battery, it has seats, and has a driver. But you look at the driver as a chelik of the taxi. He's not there. He's bottled. He doesn't matter. The taxi, in the older days, used to be the balagola. The person mattered. Whoever your children feel, klape, whoever it is, that they matter, that's where they mamash get their chiyus from. And that's who's going to have the hashpa on them. Usually it's friends. We said, we all had friends, we all had situations where we had friends like that. And those friends stay with us our whole lives. In that sense, parents are supposed to be friends. It doesn't matter, and you know what, it doesn't matter, these friends of ours, just think. These friends of ours, it doesn't matter what they said to us, if they spoke nicely or not nicely, it's not so important. But because they are who they are, so we're makabel from them. Parents need to be that. You need to show your children that their opinion counts by you. You need to show them that they matter, they exist. They're not just there
for you to give you nachas. They're not just nachas machines. They matter as a mensch, as a person. And you know the old story, they say it with different people. It's old Litvishi Yeshivish story, where some Rav A was sick and Rav B wanted to be Mavaka Choylehim. And the Choyle, you heard this story, you ever heard it? And the Choyle says, I don't want you to come, don't bother. No. You heard it. He says, why? He says, you're not coming to Mavaka Choylehim. He says, by you, he says, I'm another mitzvah. I'm another chefzah. On Sukkot, you have a mitzvah to shake a lulav. You're a mensch, the lulav is a zach, it's a chefzah. Right? You put on tefillin in the morning, the tefillin is a zach, it's a chefzah. You're a mensch. You come to Mivaka choyle, the choyle is a chefzah. The choyle is a zach with which you do the mitzvah. You come to do a mitzvah, you're the mensch and I'm a zach. You know, I don't want to be a zach. I don't want to be a chefzah for your God. You come to visit a human being, gesundheit. You know, it's a different attitude with, you know, when you come to be Mavaka, it's a different attitude. So, in this story, the attitude that was perceived was, I'm coming to be Yoitza Mitzvah, you know, Megeta Reina Bisomer, Shon Yoitza Gven, this year Machmir Mekel, you know, like, Bis Genuk Choyle, you know, maybe I should wait until you get sicker because maybe you're not a Choyle and it's only Suffolk Bika Choylem. You know the attitude we're talking about. I'll tell you this. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about you can be the biggest Baal Chesed and you can mamash treat your kids the best, but they know that you're only, they're the Chefza, you know, you're only doing it so you should get nachas, you should get the mitzvah in this case. I saw this with my eyes. I was teaching once in a Beis Yaakov and they have this program, Chesed hours. They have to, every girl has to do a certain amount of hours of Chesed, you know, part of the chesed they do, there's this Bikur Cholim. So it was a very, very big opportunity for the girls. They were all besimcha when a friend of theirs, Nebuch, got hit by a car, and she broke her arm and her shoulder, and she ended up in the hospital. And they were going to visit her and everything, and Bikur, they got all their... And I remember seeing this. Girl comes back to class one day with her arm, her shoulder in a sling, and a girl comes over to her and says, Oy vey, I wanted to do... You're back! I was planning on visiting you today in the hospital because I have to find somewhere else to get my chesed hours. You know? And she didn't mean it as a joke. She didn't even mean it bad. Just meant like, oi, shucks. You know, you're better. You got well. Now I have to find some other. I was going to visit you today, you know? Nebuch. Now I have to find some other choyle to visit. Okay? This is not Bikur Cholim. This is not Chinuch. This is Mamash. I don't know what they're teaching. I don't know what the message that the girls are picking up like this, but it's not to care about other people. That's for sure. This is not what's happening. This is not what Bikur Cholim is supposed to be. And by the way, the word Bikur does not mean visit. In Ohn Ivrit, that's what it is. But Bikur in Lashon HaKodesh does not mean visit. It means an investigation. Like Bikur Mumim by Karbonis. Right, but by Bikur Cholim doesn't mean just to visit the Chole, to come there. It means to be concerned about the Chole, to care about the Chole. That's what it means. Not just, you know, like they do, they bring a whole class of kids in, okay, Bikur Cholim visited, next room, next room, next room, you know, and as you're doing it, you're like racking up the mitzvahs of Bikur, I was Mavaka, this one, that one. That's not Pshat. Pshat is to be concerned and to care about somebody. Not to just come in, okay, I was yoitza my shir of Bikur Cholim, you know, like okay, time to come out of the yichud room, yoitza your shir, okay, Bikur Cholim, yoitza gven, next one, you know, I had my shir, right? That's not pshat. That's not what's supposed to be. You're supposed to be concerned about somebody, and that's what it means. So then, and we'll stop over here. Anybody has any questions, we'll take them. But that's the bottom line. You want to be mashpi on your children, you have to give them the message that you actually care about them as a mensch. Not merely for the emotional feedback that they give you. You need to give them over the message that you are unconditionally on their side. It doesn't mean that you approve of what they do, but you're on their side in the same sense that those friends of ours were on our side, and that no matter what, we are going to try our best to protect them, and that even if it means going out of our way, we put their development over on top of our convenience. And then they'll be makabel from us. Any questions? Yeah. How do you bring them out? It's the same thing. I'll tell you what it is.
Derech klal, this kid lacks the confidence to assert themselves barabim. If they see that the parents really believe in them and really a machshiv what they have to say, but really not just, you know, because that's what, you know, Rabbi Shapiro said in a parenting class that this is what you should do, so you go home. Well, this is what. No, if they really, really see that it's ernst and it's honest and it's real, so they're going to start believing in themselves. That's what it is. It's the same thing. You need to give the children the confidence that they count, that what they say matters. Doesn't have to be. They don't have to be always right or wrong. If let's say you're painting the kitchen, right, and you're sitting there thinking. And the kid, how old the kid are we talking about approximately? Doesn't matter. Okay, so take the example as just a mushel. And you know, say, Rachel, what color do you think what color do you think matches with this best? Right? You know how much that means to a kid? You don't have to listen. You don't have to obey. You're asking for input. That's all. That's all it is. That's all it is. You're not asking a shayla, shavi nafshe chaticha. You're not asking the rav a shayla that if they say something, you have to listen. You're not asking mutarasa. You're asking for input, what they think. Exactly. Feel a part of, feel choshuv, feel that they count, feel that they matter, feel that what they say is toifas makam in what you think. And that's what it is. Yeah, yes.
Let's say
relevant.
Yeah, totally relevant.
Okay, I'll tell you. I gave a number of classes on that particular thing. In short, A, you need to get to know the kid. In other words, usually in these cases, the reason why the kid thinks that the parent is out of touch is because, A, the kid feels the parent doesn't know the kid, and B, the kid feels the parent doesn't know the environment that the kid is growing up in. You need to learn about those two things. You need to be out there wherever the kid is doing to see where he's going, what he's doing, to learn about the environment that they're in. The mashal that I give in an extreme case, let's say, Rahman Lutzlan, somebody had a kid that's interested in a cult, in Buddhism, right? What's the first thing a parent would do? Get all the books they can on Buddhism to find out what it's about, to be able to damashatoshiv, to be able to answer. Because if you don't, then you, Taka, have no right in the kid's mind to have an opinion, because you grow Amoritz. So you need to learn about whatever culture or lifestyle or whatever it is that this kid believes that you're out of touch with, you need to learn about. And it's very, very doable. I've had parents who've gone out at night to where their kids hang around simply to be able to say, well, I do know what I'm talking about. Friends. It happens all the time when a parent says, I don't think you should be friends with this and this person. The kid says, you don't even know him. They say, the eight says, fine, get to know him. You know, the parents, I recommend parents. No, fine, but now you have a right to say that you don't approve of it. You see, if you don't approve it, the most you can do is say. The question is how to get your kid to think that you're not out of touch. And the answer is to be not out of touch. The truth of the matter is, to a large extent, we are out of touch. We are in such a different door. I mean, it's an illusion. When I was a kid, my father was a European, and most of the kids my age, our parents were European. And we literally grew up in a different continent, speaking literally a different language. So we know that our parents were out of touch to a certain extent. And now, first of all, parents are younger than they were in those days. They may be 20, 25 years older than their parent. You know, you can have a man that's 40 that's already making a chasana. Happens all the time. Didn't have it when I was a kid. And also, we grew up literally on the same streets as our kids. The streets, let's say in Brooklyn, I went to the same restaurants that my kids are going to now. Right? I slept in the same dormitory in Yeshiva where my son sleeps now, in the exact same building. So we have this illusion that we're more connected to, but the truth of the matter is it's an illusion. That this door is so much different than ours. The difference is much greater than between us and our European parents. It's true.
in the next, and every 5 years it's different. Every 10 years it changes. Doiris go 5-10 years now. And the truth is, we usually are out of touch. I recommend very, very strongly for parents to learn more and more and more about the places and the things that the children are involved in, so that they won't have this problem. Yeah.
What happens when, well, let's say you, whatever, and you really understand the child, the other parent doesn't understand.
Well, the teretz is that you know, this question I get a lot, always from the. I always get this question from the parents, not from the parents that really belongs here. That really belongs, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. There are a lot of different possibilities, and it's a very sticky situation. L'chadchila, the best thing to do, if the other parent is reasonable or open, to try to get them to understand. And more often than not, it does happen. I mean, I've had women that, and men that have schlepped their spouses to, like, these talks. Even let's say it was for only men or for only women, the other one would be standing outside the door because the husband or the wife insisted that they come, you know, to hear things. Usually, this other parent is not effective or successful in controlling the kid. And if they have enough seichel to understand that what they're doing is not working, then perhaps they ought to change what they're doing. You know, if you're talking about something that's working, if it's not broken, you don't fix it. But if it's somebody that mamish doesn't have a relationship with the kid and has no control or influence over the kid, then l'chadchila, the best thing is if this person can be made to understand that there's another mahalach. There's another mahalach. And between me and you, usually, more often than not, and I'll bet people start nodding soon, more often than not, the reason why the person is stubborn like this is because that's the way their parents were. Okay? Let me guess. An Alta Litvisha war survivor? The parent of the parents we're talking about?
No, on the contrary. An issue of it. It was something that was Lashon Hara or damaging. I wouldn't even ask it.
Okay.
The reason I'm saying it is because they're really talking a different language. They're talking a different language because they're coming from a child, and let's say my husband, they're coming from totally different language.
Okay,
and that's why I'm saying it's not an issue of a bad parent or somebody who's
right,
caring
okay.
And loving and stuff. It's just,
okay, just for
understanding where he's coming from.
Okay, I'm not going to ask any further for specifics, but usually this comes either from parents, the person, either grew up in a real starke, strict, like I said, Alta Litvisha war survivor type father, or the parents of Balei Tshuva, and they never experienced themselves a Charedi Chinuch. So it's very difficult for them to bring up their, very difficult to know where to put their foot down and where not. And there are a lot of in between. I'm not asking for any more information, but these type of things, so maybe there's a third or fourth, a mashal, but this type of thing. The person must be made to understand. If he's out of touch, he must be made to understand that he's out of touch. You know, the Yismach Moshe once said a word. Said, Ishbar lo yeda uksil lo yovenes zois. What's the difference between the Ishbar and the Ksil? He says, Ishbar lo yeda. The Ishbar doesn't know, but he knows he doesn't know. Ksil lo yovenes zois. The Ksil doesn't know that he doesn't know. He thinks that he knows. That's worse. So the first thing is that you have to get the person to understand that he is out of touch. And Vaharaya, whatever you're doing is not working. Okay? Step B, there is another Mahalach. Where you don't have to be mavata on Kala Tairikula. You know, because usually what happens is that they're saying, I'm doing this because this is Das Taira. And I don't want to approve of anything differently. And I have to put my foot down and I have to take a stand and I have to make a point. That's usually what I hear in these cases. Uh-uh. It doesn't work that way. You need to treat your children. Children are like any other Kiruv project. You have to bring them up according to their level. Chanoich l'nar al pi darkoi. Okay? People think sometimes that their children is I don't know, listen, the halachas of Lifnaiva, the halachas of Kiev, the halachas of... apply to your children like anybody else. Apply to your children. You have more leeway because they're under your shilton, your parents, but it applies to anybody else. And the bottom line is, whatever is effective, that's what you need to do. You know, there are a lot of halachas. You should have this person speak to a Rav. If you want, specifically, Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Zeichet Tzadik Lebrocha, has a whole arichas in his Sefer, Simen Dalet, if anybody's interested. And Mincha Shlomo, about what happens in a case, different scenarios, what happens in a case where you could prevent somebody from doing something very bad by allowing them to do just a little bad. Okay? And he gives a mashal, I mean, this is, you know, precise halachic issues, but he gives a mashal that sometimes to save an aver, you have to cut off a finger. You know? His example is like Kiruv example. Says, let's say you invite somebody for a fry person for a Shabbos meal, and they're going to drive to your house on Shabbos. Yeah. Not, yeah, so he says, if you're not making them drive, in other words, if you're inviting them from Yerushalayim to Bnei Brak, that you can't do, because then you're a Mesis. You're telling them, please drive on Shabbos. But if, let's say, for Shabbos morning meal I'm talking, if you're inviting them from a place where they could walk and they choose to drive, and by doing so you feel you can make them frum, it's 100% permitted, and they're not going to make... you're not allowed to give somebody food if they're not going to make a bracha. But if it's a case where this person would be eating trefa food if they wouldn't be by you, then you're doing a mitzvah. Okay, Rav Moshe Feinstein says the same things in numerous places. Excuse me? What do you mean? You're talking about bracha achroina. Until you're dying for bread is not a deraisa. Bracha achroina is a deraisa. No, bracha achroina is deraisa. Bracha rishaina is drabonin. But the guy would... no, if you have a choice, you should do the little as possible. But if it's a choice between kosher bread and trefa bread, okay, then it's kosher bread. I mean, you're always trying to minimize the michshel, but if it's a choice between your minimal michshel and somebody else's minimal michshel, then fine. You know, always if it's something that he doesn't have to, you know, make. But even though that's, I mean, all bracha achroin is deraisa, but by bread is three brachas. You're right, bread is worse. Bread is worse. But... No. It's better not to give him, because, you know, in other words, if you're going to be machshel somebody already, and I say machshel facetiously because you're saving him from something worse, then you should try to save him as much as possible. And why should you give him bread if you can give him something else where he won't have to bench? If it's shot, I understand. You, right. It's not, you're not chayiv. You know, well, let's say, how about this one? Here's one of Reb Shlomo Zalman's cases. A lot of people don't know this. Let's say a woman has to go to hospital on Shabbos. So she calls a taxi. Is it better to call a Jewish taxi, a Chiloni, or a Goyish taxi? Says Reb Shlomo Zalman, no. He says, if you call a Jewish taxi, if he doesn't do the mitzvah of driving you to hospital, he's going to drive somebody to the soccer game. And while there's a heter and a mitzvah to drive you to the hospital, it's chil Shabbos before hestia to drive somebody to the soccer game. Therefore, by calling him and making him drive you, even though he's not going to do punkt exactly the way he's chayiv to do, but you're saving him from doing a lot worse. So you've got a big mitzvah, saving him from doing worse averus, and so on and so forth. Okay, now you should. So it's a baseball game, then not a soccer game. That's the only difference.
No, because what I was thinking, because most of the left is like, you know, having people not. I mean, I had that question in Montreal many times. I mean, it's somebody that I'm going to invite coming to me for Shabbos today. And Rabbi Wenger in Montreal told us that if you know that the person is by somewhere else, to a restaurant or somewhere where they're not going to eat Shabbos stick of food, then better they drive to you and eat and have the Shabbos table than to drive somewhere else and have a Shabbos table.
Right, that's okay. True. Right. That's the same thing here.
Now, for this question, hospital, a lot of times you would think that, I know, like in Canada, let's say, for me right away, when I'm about to go to the hospital to give birth, I would think right away, if there's a Jew, not a taxi driver, but a Jew around me, would I ask the Jewish person around the car?
No, that's a different story. That's a different story, because there, even in Israel, same thing. Because there, if he wouldn't be turned... If the guy would be just sleeping a whole day rather than being Mechal Shabbos, then of course let him sleep. But if he's driving around anyway, for instance, then that's another story. So one second, so the man needs to understand that it's not always a mitzvah to take a stand and to say no. Sometimes it's a mitzvah to make certain allowances in order to prevent worse things. You know, in other words, the person has to speak... What's happening is that this person feels that he's going to get a big aveira if he acts differently than he's doing now. He needs to speak to a big rav that'll set him straight. That's the bottom line. Yeah. Gets you next. Excuse me? I understand. I understand. So wherever it is, it's the, you know, the same thing.
I don't mean go to bed, I don't want to see, but this is my need.
That's fine, as long as it's not the ikker, but it's the tuffel tool in your chinuch repertoire, you understand? In other words, if that's the main thing, okay, that's number one. Number two, tell your kid, okay, don't trick him. Tell your kid, look, I want to read this book, I want to go to bed, I want to do this, you know, please, be quiet. Happens all the time. But tell them, you know, have a little courtesy. That's A. B, it can't be the ikker. You know, the ikker is that you have to be concerned over them. Occasionally, you know, it's derech haroi, but derech keva should be the other way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Parents have to stick together. I mean, that's the oldest you cite in the book. Parents have to stick together. That's okay. It may also have to do with age. I don't know how old these children are that we're talking about. I once said B'derek Jerush, the reason why it says by Ben Soiru Meira that it has Kailov of Kikailima, it has to be. It says the mother's voice and the father's voice have to sound the same. And what it means is that if the mother and the father speak with two different voices, meaning they disagree, the kid is potter from being a Ben Soiru Meira because you can't blame him anymore from going off the derech. Because he had two parents that disagree with each other. But if the parents do agree, then the kid gets punished as a Ben Soiru Meira because then it's his fault. Made it up. But it does say that it has to be Koilov of Kikoilimoi. Now, Poshet Apshad is they have to actually sound the same, which is very modern, which is why some people say that it's not Shayach Ben Soiru Meira. But I'm just adding a little Trushin here. The parents need to know that they need to agree, and when they disagree, they need to like disagree and then have a little meeting, then come out with a kule alma, you know, a totally agreed upon solution to the problem. Because you can, that's really, it's the worst thing for a house if one and the other, it really is. Then the kid says, I don't have to listen to you. I don't have to listen to you, I don't have to listen to nobody. And good guy, bad guy, Zahalbitzar, they both become the unauthoritative guy. And then that's goodbye. Yes? Okay.
We married, my husband and the father, they all of a sudden fell into a conflict. We had
to hope things have worked out since then.
It was
poor. Slacha Rabba. Are the parents Hasidish in the same way as the rest of the community? So you're talking about, let's say, just for a while example, let's take a community of Ger Hasidim, and the kid just decides he doesn't want to be a Ger Hasid. He wants to be more modern. Usually relocating, usually the problem is not that he doesn't want to be a ger chassid, because al pi derech hateva, if the parents are just not one way, let's say parents moved in the middle of, I don't know, wherever, in the ger community, and they send their kid there, and the kid is totally out of place because the way he was brought up, that's one story. But if the kid wants to be different, both from the community and from his family, it's not just the spodik that he's objecting to. That's usually not the case. Usually it's just